Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the Practical Evidence Podcast, the podcast for the things you need to know but don't have the time to read. This month, we're going to talk about the brand new ischemic stroke guidelines from both the American Stroke Association / American Heart Association and ASEP, the American College of Emergency Medicine, or emergency physicians, or some such thing that ASEP stands for. You could look it up, ASEP.org. Go there, you'll figure it out. So let's start off with the AHA-ASA guidelines, because they're the big ones here. So you know how it works. I go through what's really important to ED and critical care guys. I leave out the stuff that's just for the inpatient, non-critical care. And I'm going to condense the actual wording to stuff you can understand and actually listen to versus the way it's written, which is pure torture on a podcast. But the full text of both of these guidelines is available at practicalevidence.org. Just find the show we're talking about and you'll find the links. All right, let's get to it. So first up, stroke centers. Comprehensive stroke centers are good. Excellent. Places that take care of strokes should have a neurocritical care unit, and that's where the patients with serious strokes, whether hemorrhagic or ischemic, should go. And EMS should bypass hospitals that can't care for stroke. If you do not have a radiologist capable of interpreting head CTs or MRIs in-house, you should have teleradiology to do it for you, and that should be immediately available. So that's the stuff about the stroke centers. Let's get to initial evaluation. Your door to drug time should be 60 minutes or less with 80% compliance rate as the thing to shoot for. If you know you're not doing that 80% of the time, 0 to 60 minutes as your time to drug, you're kind of not making what you should. Use a stroke scale, preferably the NIH stroke scale. We knew that. Get labs. But glucose is the only one that needs to be done before you give TPA. That's good. It means, you know, if patient tells you they're not on anticoagulants and everything, you don't wait for the PTPTT. You don't wait to check the platelets. You just give the med. The only thing you need before TPA is the fingerstick glucose. All right, get an EKG and troponin. They can have simultaneous myocardial infarction along with their stroke, and they could also have dysrhythmia. But don't delay TPA to do these. And then there's a link you could click to that shows the ED-based care you should be doing as per these guidelines, and that's in the show notes as well. Let's talk imaging. You could either use a non-contrast CT or an MRI to initially exclude hemorrhage prior to giving TPA. Either one is fine. MRIs are now actually super quick, and if you have that kind of MRI and you can make it happen, knock yourself out. TPA is indicated even if ischemic signs are seen on the head CT or MRI unless a frank hypodensity is noted. A non-invasive intracranial vascular study is strongly recommended during initial imaging if intra-arterial TPA or mechanical thrombectomy is contemplated. So if you're thinking of doing these things because they're outside of the window for the IV TPA, or you just think this is a case that would benefit, you should probably get your CT angiogram or your MRA while they're on the table during that initial scan, but it shouldn't delay TPA administration if they're in the window, meaning what you should be doing on those folks to make this happen is you should be after that initial non-con CT, bringing the TPA over to CAT scan, starting it up, and then getting, while they're still on the table, the CTA of the brain. In TPA candidates, the CT or MRI should be read within 45 minutes of arrival by a physician with expertise in reading CTs or MRIs of the brain. Consider a CT perfusion or MRI perfusion scan in patients outside of the window for TPA, because that will be one of the determinants you're going to use to determine if the patient should get intra-arterial or mechanical thrombectomy. If a frank hypodensity involves more than one-third of the MCA territory, IV TPA should be withheld. All right, they have some brief stuff here about TIAs, which I'll only go through in passing. TIAs should get imaging of their cerebral vasculature, non-invasive imaging by CTA or MRA of the intracranial vasculature is recommended to exclude proximal stenosis or occlusion, and intracranial lesions may need confirmatory angio if occlusion is seen on CTA. Patients with transient symptoms should receive imaging within 24 hours. Preferably, that should be an MRI. All right, let's go back to acute treatment. Cardiac monitoring is good. So new BP meds are now allowed to get the patient to less than 185 over 110. And if you get them there, you're going to shoot for keeping them at 180 over 105 or less for the first 24 hours. Now, the new meds are things like, they list hydralazine, enalapril, which they don't list, but they probably should, is clavitipine, because that's probably the go-to agent if you have it available and you could afford it. I can't. So those are in addition to the previous ones like nicardipine and labetalol. Thankfully, they've gotten rid of the nitro paste for this, which is just swell. And they still have nitroprusside in there for intractable BP after you've initially given your TPA, though I would recommend against it. There's better agents like nicardipine, which is my preference for anything neurocritical care. Nicardipine is what I like. But basically, you can use any med you like so long as it works. And it's not going to decrease cerebral perfusion pressure or increase intracranial pressure. Next up, intubate, airway compromise, or bulbar dysfunction. Well, we know that because we're ED docs. Shoot for a pulse ox greater than 94%, but don't give supplemental oxygen in patients with a normal room air pulse ox. Too much oxygen is bad. If the patient's temp is greater than 38 degrees C, lower it. It's not good to have high temps in sick brains. Until further evidence, use the same BP Coles for intra-arterial thrombolytics as you would for the IV. In non-TPA candidates, only treat the blood pressure if the systolic is greater than 220 or the diastolic is greater than 120. Treat hypovolemia with normal saline and treat cardiac output reducing dysrhythmias, however you like to treat them, but get the heart rate down so they start increasing their cardiac output again. Treat hypoglycemia. The number they give is 60 milligrams per deciliter. You could restart home antihypertensive after 24 hours. And then if they are hyperglycemic, treat it to achieve a blood sugar of 140 to 180. That's your goal. Not super low, not 110. 140, 180 is your goal. So if they're greater than 180, you could start treating them. You'll notice that all these go out of order. You'd think they would link the hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia, the hypertension stuff all together. I'm just reading it how they list it in the actual guidelines. So I'm not making any editorial comments about this. Well, actually, I just did, but there you go. IV fibrinolytics. Here we go. Here's the big stuff. Give IV TPA in patients who meet the 3-hour criteria. That was given a 1A recommendation, and those criteria are in the show notes. Getting it within that window is not enough. Shoot to get it in the less than 60-minute time frame. Now, this is important, and I see this all the time, is that sometimes your neuro resident thinks, oh, well, we're at the 1-hour, 10-minute mark, and we have to get it in within 3 hours. Let's take our time, because we have all the time in the world. We have, you know, an hour and 50 minutes. No, it doesn't work that way. You got to get it in as soon as humanly possible, no matter what your time zero is from their arrival in the hospital. So you just try to move everything along as quick as possible. Give IV TPA to patients who meet the criteria for the less than 4.5 hours, and that was given a 1B recommendation. So be prepared to treat complications of TPA, including bleeding, and this is a big one, angioedema. Have you ever seen this? It's kind of miserable. They could get angioedema from the TPA. Now, here's where the fun begins, because basically all the next recommendations say give TPA no matter what. So this one is TPA is reasonable if the patient had a seizure, if the treating team feels the deficit is from the stroke and not from the seizure. Benefits of sonothrombolysis are unknown at this time. You know, that's the idea. You could increase the yield of the thrombolytic if you put a sono on their head. Other agents besides TPA should only be used in clinical trials. Benefit of TPA is unknown in the patient in the 3 to 4.5-hour range with one of the contraindications. They're then saying that in the patients who have contraindications in that 3 to 4.5-hour range, but only one, it may be okay, they don't know. Use of TPA in patients with mild deficits, rapidly improving deficits, major surgery in the prior 3 months, recent MI, may be considered and should be based on a risk-benefit assessment. So now they're saying you could even give it in those patients if you think it's a good idea. Next up, don't use streptokinase. The use of intravenous TPA in patients taking direct thrombin inhibitors or direct factor 10A inhibitors may be harmful and is not recommended unless sensitive laboratory tests such as APTT, INR, platelet count, and ECTT, or other appropriate factor 10A activity assays are normal, or the patient has not received the dose of these agents for greater than 2 days, assuming normal renal function. Similar consideration should be given to patients being considered for IA TPA. So what does this mean? It means if your patient's on dabigatran, rivaroxaban, any of those new agents, don't give it unless you have a test telling you that they've been noncompliant or you know for a fact they've been noncompliant. This is nice. It gives us some idea of what to do in these situations. So I'm happy about that. Intra-arterial fibrinolysis is next. Patients eligible for IV should receive it even if you're going down the IA path. So if they're in that less than 3 or 4.5 hour window, give it and then ship them out for the IA. Use it if less than 6 hours duration caused by MCA lesion not eligible for IV tPA. Minimize the delays. Practitioners doing this should be credentialed and they should track their outcomes. They prefer Solitaire, FR, and Trevo. These are stent retrievers over coil retrievers such as the Mercy device, and the Penumbra device is still being studied. All mechanical devices need additional study to demonstrate benefit. IA or retrieval are reasonable in patients with contraindications to IV tPA. Rescue intra-arterial or mechanical thrombectomy is reasonable in patients who have not fully responded to IV. Other devices need additional trials. Intracranial angio and stenting requires additional study. And extracranial angio and/or stenting in unselected patients is not a well-established therapy. They then go on to talk about all sorts of other meds. And basically, the take-home on these is they all of them need further study. So thrombin inhibitors, more study. Anticoagulants for severe carotid stenosis, more study. Don't give urgent anticoagulants to prevent stroke recurrence. Don't start anticoagulants no matter what within 24 hours. You are asked to give a dose of 325 of aspirin within 24 to 48 hours of stroke. Clopidogrel, benefit unknown. Tirofiban, maybe. And eptifibatide, there's better pronunciations for all of them. I don't know what they are. Have unknown benefit. Don't use 2B3A agents. Don't give aspirin until 24 hours after tPA. Great. There's some more blood pressure stuff. In extreme cases of hypotension that do not respond to fluids, use vasopressors. We need more evidence for high-dose albumin. We need more evidence for devices that augment cerebral perfusion pressure. Drug-induced hypertension, not recommended. Don't hemodilute. Vasodilatory agents are not recommended. Other stuff. If the patient was taking statins, you may continue them. Induced hypothermia, needs more study. Laser therapy, needs more study. Neuroprotectants, haven't worked out yet. They need more study. Emergent endarterectomy, benefits unknown at this time. Stroke units, check the guideline. I'm not going through that. Neurocritical care interventions. Patients with major infarctions can crap out, so watch them carefully. That probably means in an ICU. Cerebellar infarctions will probably need surgery. Decompressive craniectomy is good for malignant edema. Treat recurrent seizures just like you would in other patients. Place an external ventricular drain in patients with hydrocephalus. Though medical interventions for malignant edema are used, there's no evidence for their benefit. No steroids at all. Don't use steroids. No steroids. No prophylactic anticonvulsants. And that is my summary of the AHA-ASA 2013 ischemic stroke guidelines. Now, before we get to ASEP, which is actually just 2 minutes worth, let me mention our bandwidth sponsor, which, as always, is EB Medicine. EB Medicine, the best evidence-based literature out there. Go to their site, ebmedicine.net. In fact, don't go to their site. Go to my site, practicalevidence.org, and click on the link, and that way they know I sent you, and they'll keep on sponsoring the show. Now, the ASEP 2013 Clinical Policy Committee guidelines on ischemic stroke, and basically, there's only two of them, and the two questions they were looking at is IV tPA safe and effective for acute ischemic stroke when given within 3 hours of symptoms and then within 3 to 4.5 hours. And at level A, I'm going to read the exact wording. In order to improve functional outcomes, IV tPA should be offered to acute ischemic stroke patients who meet the NINDS inclusion and exclusion criteria and can be treated within 3 hours of symptom onset. And then at level B, in order to improve functional outcomes, IV tPA should be considered in acute ischemic stroke patients who meet the ECAS-3 inclusion and exclusion criteria and can be treated within 3 to 4.5 hours. Now, you want to look at the actual wording here because I think there's the devil is in the details. But basically, they're saying within the three-hour window, you got to offer the tPA and let the patient decide. Within the 3 to 4.5-hour window, you better be considering it. Now, I don't know what considering it means, but I certainly know it means less than offering. So read the actual wording at the show notes because this is super important. This is our society now establishing a standard of care. They say they don't, but they do. When they write this stuff, they're establishing a standard of care, so you better be reading it. So go to practicalevidence.org and check it out. Now, you might be wondering, what is M-Crit drinking? Well, he's drinking a White Rascal from Avery Brewing. Delicious, refreshing. It's bringing on spring in my head. Well, we ran long, but that's good because we did not have a February episode, so this one will suffice for both. This is Scott Weingart for the Practical Evidence Podcast saying bye-bye.